Welcome to Speed Talk session 5, which topics are human resources in a changing statistical environment and communicating quality of official statistics. Before we start, I would like to just to briefly present myself. My name is Monika Bieniek. I work for Statistics Poland. I'm a deputy director in programming and coordination of statistical service department. For over 10 years, I've been dealing with the quality issues, coordination in the field of methodological works, metadata, and standard classifications. And today I have the pleasure for chairing this session, which is called Speed Talk session. Since this is the first time slot with this kind of session, I would like just say a few words about the rules. This kind of session lasts a maximum 45 minutes. Each individual presentation should take no longer than 4 minutes. According to the formula on this type of session, there is no time planned for discussion or questions. So maybe a lunchtime or corridor would be the good opportunity to ask the presenters about the questions you have. Since one of my duty here is having control on running time. I would like to explain the method I use to inform speakers when they are near to their presentation time limit. And 1 minute before reaching the end of the allocated time, you'll hear a ringtone. I will use my mobile phone. And if presenter reaches the end of the allocated time, you'll hear another one ringtone. And if it will not work, I will use my red paper. And I'm aware that it will be challenging to finish on time, but by the respect of all presenters, I would kindly ask you to respect the rules and not to exceed the allocated time. And my last kind request, we are very few, but I would like to ask to switch your mobile phone or to turn them to silent mode. After this short general introduction, I think we can start the presentation of papers. According to the program, we have 7 very interesting presentations. And now I would like to introduce our first speaker of today. It's Mr. Ed Humphreyson from United Kingdom, who's the head of the Office for Statistics Regulation, operationally known as Director General for Regulation. He's the authority's principal advisor on the assessment and reassessment of official statistics and their compliance with the Code of Practice for Official Statistics. Mr. Humphreyson took up post of Director General for Regulation in January 2014. He's going to tell us about the process of creating in UK's new Office for Statistics Regulation as a regulator of statistics. And Statistics Regulation for an Age of Post-Truth is the title of his presentation. Please welcome.
Will my slides be appearing? I'm not having this into my 4 minutes, by the way. My 4 minutes hasn't started yet.
1 second. Okay. Maybe it's... Oh, is it?
Good afternoon. 2016 was a difficult year for official statistics in the UK. It's a growing sense that big data might be making official statistics irrelevant. There were significant criticisms of ONSs, the Office for National Statistics, Economic Statistics, and there was, of course, a referendum on the UK's membership of the European Union, and that referendum seemed to epitomise a decline in trust in experts and a rise in this notion of post-truth. These trends of irrelevance and of post-truth, of course, not specific to the UK. Konrad Pessendorfer covered them extremely well in his talk this morning. But what I am going to talk about is a response which is specific to the UK, which is to create an Office for Statistics Regulation. So that's what I'm going to talk about. As the Office for Statistics Regulation, we set standards, we review compliance with those standards, we report publicly about the quality of statistics, and most importantly, we speak out against the misuse of statistics. And I'm going to introduce just three features of OSR as a regulator, based around our purpose statement. This is our purpose statement. The first of our features is that we focus on the public nature of statistics. This public focus guides all of our work. You'll see in our purpose statement, the term public appears four times, and that's a very conscious decision to signal that we stand up for statistics serving the citizens, not government ministers, not government departments or agencies, but citizens. And that guides all of our judgments about when we should intervene, when we should step in and tell a government minister that they should publish statistics they've been withholding or should correct their misuse of statistics. Is this misleading to the public? The second feature I want to pick out is our framework. The way we think about pretty much everything is a framework that we call trustworthiness, quality and value, or TQV. Trustworthiness being the organization, the culture and the style, the human capital of the organization that produces the statistics. Quality, you'll be familiar with because we're here at Q 2018, and value being the questions that the statistics answer, the insights they provide. And we use this framework to think through any particular problem with statistics. Is this a problem of organizational environment, of trustworthiness? Is it a problem of data quality or methodological quality? Or is it a problem of value that the statistics are not answering the questions that people want to have answered, the public want to answer? So TQV is our organizing framework for all of our actions. And the third feature of the Office for Statistics Regulation is very consciously a spectrum of enforcement. On the one hand, we are very happy to challenge publicly the misuse of statistics. If we see statistics being misused, the public being misled, we will stand up. And some of you will know in the course of last year, we publicly and very firmly criticised Boris Johnson, the UK's Foreign Secretary, an extremely high-profile politician, for misuse of statistics. We're comfortable doing that. But at the other end of the spectrum, we're equally comfortable and delighted when we can celebrate publicly by making public statements when producers of official statistics do a very good job. So we have a whole spectrum of enforcement which balances those two poles. That's really all I wanted to say. I'm probably well within my time. I wanted to introduce you to the Office for Statistics Regulation. If you want to know more, Google Office for Statistics Regulation. As far as I'm aware, we're the only one, so you will find us. Alternatively, if you prefer a more direct human touch, come and speak to me. And if you want to hear more about TQV, our framework, come and hear me tomorrow at 9 a.m. I'm going to be giving a longer talk about that in session 8 in room S2. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. You were perfect. Thank you very much. And now I would like to invite our second speaker, Ms. Nili Karshai from the Israel Central Bureau of Statistics. She works in the International Relations Department. She's a professional in data dissemination. She's responsible for data dissemination on the international organizations. And Ms. Karshai is going to tell us about the MIRROR exercises and international cooperation.
Exercises. The paper is designed for non-professionals. It is written in a statistics decided MIO statistics. Country A data on export to country B should be equal to country B data on imports from country A. So in theory, those two columns should be identical. But in real life, it's very simple. There are discrepancies. There are asymmetries. And now I will show you just one example from two countries from a large project. Use an asymmetry between Egypt and Israel. Brown columns, dark columns are Israel data. The fair color is Egypt data. One side, the couple is for imports, the other couple is for export, and we see very large discrepancies, very large asymmetry. Let's think about a businessman who is engaged in trade. How can he use the data? Which country will he use? Can he trust official statistics? I believe you're asking yourself what causes such an asymmetry. So you're invited to read a paper. It's a statistical literacy paper. And the paper teaches some basic methods and concepts needed for the reader to understand the issue. And then it shows some of the causes for asymmetries. And now I will come to the tool, the methodological tool. It is commonly used in many countries. It's used first to identify the causes, the two partners from two country seats, and look for differences. The second stage is to explain why are the differences between us. And it is a really data mining process. The partners reveal each other with detailed information. At the end, the third stage is the reconciliation. They talk to each other and think of what and how to change. Here is a picture of the Israeli, Palestinians, Jordanians, and Egyptian statisticians who took part of this MedStat project, and it's an opportunity to say thank you for the EU for organizing it. And the phrase cooperation is needed is not a cliche, because in trade statistics, they really have to trust each other, to be honest with one each other, because they reflect each other. Now I will give you just one example for one discrepancy, one problem out of many in this large project. Egypt and Israel discovered that they have a built-in asymmetry, methodological asymmetry. The partners don't use the same method. The method is called international trade system, and the two systems are allowed. And the two systems treat differently the issue of trade, of free trade zone. So the Israeli goods exported into Egypt were included in Israel, but it was excluded from Egyptian data, and that was the reason for the gap. And then came the part of the reconciliation of equaling the data. Now we come to the conclusion. The users of trade data are encouraged to read the data of the two countries and then look at the metadata of the two countries to understand. And discrepancies should be reduced since accurate and comparable statistics facilitate actual trade. Now I say thank you, and I hope that this paper will contribute to statistical literacy, and thank you.
Thank you very much. Now I would like to invite our third speaker, Mr. Gurdal Gedik, from the Turkish Statistical Institute, where he's been working for 17 years. He started as an expert on European Union affairs since 2010.
No.
He's been head of International Cooperation and European Union Coordination Division and Quality Quest in official statistics through international cooperation. Turkish Statistical Institute experience is the title of his presentation.
Yes. Thank you. I would like to give some information, share information about Turkish Statistical Institute experience, about way of improving quality through international cooperation. There are some important drivers for these cooperation activities in global context and national context. In the global context, the main drivers for international cooperation are fundamental principles of official statistics, code of practice, OECD good practices, and sustainable development goals, which encourages offices, national statistical offices, and other authorities to make international cooperation. And in national context, strategic plan of Turkstat and international cooperation policy of Turkstat are the main internal drivers for the office to make international cooperation. What's our experience for these cooperation activities are the one of the important thing, the basis, our deep-rooted statistical culture, which dates back centuries ago, 14th centuries from the Ottoman Empire, and recent experience are the global assessment exercise, some assessment studies. There are three and some two peer reviews in the recent years. According to these assessment studies, three big EU-funded national programs we have implemented so far, and also Eurostat multi-beneficiary programs have contributed to the experience of the office and active involvement in cooperation activities as technical assistance provider, donor activities also improved our experience. Our main philosophy is acting both as a beneficiary and technical assistance provider at the same time. Mutual learning, interactive learning is the main idea of the institute, and our vision is being a statistical hub in the wide region of Eurasia. Our main mission is to contribute the quality of official statistics in other countries, and the key element is its demand-based structure. All the programs are started with the demand of the country. And our main partner, I will mention, Turkish International Cooperation Agency, and main special areas of interest are Middle East, Caucasia, Central Asia, and Africa, I can say. We have some important advantages in these activities, and they are, we can say, deep-rooted statistical culture, dates back to Ottoman Empire. The first register unit in the country was built in 14th century, the registry name, and started to product data in this unit, actually. And long-lasting international cooperation, culture, and experience, which started in the very beginning of 1990s after the breakup of the Soviet Union, and we can say cultural and historical ties with certain countries in Balkan countries, Middle East, Africa, Asia are all big facilitators in our activities. The main features of these activities, cooperation programs, are they are always demand-based, in line with Turkish foreign policy, oriented to the needs of the demanding NSOs. They are always program-based manner. They are flexible, easily we can amend the programs, and they are always result-oriented. TİKA, Turkish International Coordination Agency, is the official institute in Turkey responsible for coordinating official international official development assistance. And we are our main partner. We are working together. And so far, you see the numbers, how many experts come to our office and how many Turkstat experts went to their offices to share their experiences. And you see the other partners, international like World Bank, UN, and some regional organizations like CESRIC, EFTA, and Economic Cooperation Organizations. In my last slide, you can see the cooperation programs of so far and also ongoing activities. I can say that for these countries, we have implemented more than one or two activities. For example, three programs with Mongolia, four programs with Palestine, Somali, Tajikistan. There are not one programs. You see the ongoing countries, ongoing programs, and I can add only Mozambique. Very recently, we are planning to start cooperation program. Thank you.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
You.
Thank you.
Yeah. If I'm so fast, sorry.
challenging, yes, it is. Now I would like to introduce our fourth and fifth presenter at the same time, Mr. Patrizio Di Nicola from Italy, who's going to present two papers. First one about e-learning in ISTAT on behalf of his colleague, Ms. Tiziana Carino, who couldn't come. And she's dealing with human resources issues, and she's involved in developing innovative teaching methods and tools. And the second presentation is going to be about setting up a completeness system in at ISTAT. Mr. Patrizio Di Nicola represents the Italian National Institute of Statistics, where he is responsible for organizational welfare. He's also professor of advanced organizational behavior at the Department of Communication and Social Research at University at Rome, La Sapienza. And Mr. Patrizio, please, the floor is yours.
Yes, thank you.
And you have four minutes.
I will use eight minutes because I have two presentations and I shall link the fourth and the fifth presentation.
If you manage in 8 minutes, but not longer.
No longer, yes. Of course.
Yes, please.
I will try. All the others were...
Thank you.
Yes, okay. Okay, why competence system at ISTAT? Because we had a real problem a couple of years ago, and we moved, changed the work for over 50% of the people working at ISTAT. That means that they joined the new colleague, new friends, and new job, and so on. And so, the people at ISTAT asked themselves, how can we supply education, new skills, to that kind of people that are moved around? You said to me a competent system. This is the other presentation. Okay, I will start from this one. So we try to present, to build a competent system. What this means, that we need a competent system. That in our strategy, we shall use competencies, the competence of the people as a basic for recruiting, external mobility, internal mobility, and training, career development, and assessment of people. and we build up some tools like a competence register, a survey on organizational competencies, a survey on occupation, what you really do, hard skills. Are you able to use such statistical tools or not? Self-assessment of competencies, mapping of competences, and for managers, we use a tool called the 360-degree feedback, which is a complex system of self-assessment. For managers, it was very hard because they were evaluated by people below, people, upper people, so top management, colleagues, and so on. So the basic idea is that we have three kind of overlaps. We can have people who own as competencies and they use this competence in their everyday work. Second condition, people have such a lot of competences, but they don't use all the competencies. And third, they should need some competencies, but they don't have competencies. And here, we should concentrate all the efforts and all the expenses in education. According to our survey made last year, a lot of people do self-instructions. They read the book, they follow statistical issues, reviews, and so on. They don't wait for education supplied by ISTAT. And therefore, we forced on this, because our our idea is to build a new system, a complex system, where the people enter inside, and we understood what kind of education they really need, how is costly this education, and how much the people do self-education by themselves. Okay, this is the basic idea. And we base all the life, the next evolution of people on this. And now I stop at this. I go to the second presentation, which is a little bit complex to find. You know, I use normally a Mac system, because I am out of the standards in my country. And therefore, I suppose that Windows was made by strange people living in the middle of the United States. A little bit closer to
this,
Tiziana.
This? What's this presentation?
This. Mm-hmm. No, this is the one I already explained. We have wonderful technicians because they are all at lunch area.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't true?
One second.
No, this. As the name is Tiziana.
Tiziana.
Tiziana. I want to skip this minute. Thank you.
Tiziana? I don't have any.
The last one.
The last one.
To build this the system I already explained, we ask to ourselves, how can we supply education in a costly effective manner to the people? And we decide to improve our e-learning skills in the sense that we build up a system, an e-learning integrated system. We use blended learning at the very beginning. Because it seems that e-learning is so annoying for people that they stay hours in front of the PC without learning everything at the end. I don't know, this is my impression. You know, I am a professor in the university, and I know that the people enjoy to stay together. And therefore, blended learning is a good tool to mix, to tell. Learning and sociality. That's a good idea for us. So blended learning is not only e-learning, but this is a mix of webinar, for instance, video lessons, video tutorial, virtual classrooms, and so on. All kind of tools who allows people to stay together at least virtually, but without being isolated. And this is an example, for instance, of a program. We call it that Start for Lunch, because this session, we all the Start for Lunch webinars at lunchtime, of course. Very good for me. So I skip the lunch, and we made video lessons, so small pills of 5, maximum 10 minutes of video on a specific item, like census or surveys, training, that question, how to put the question in a questionnaire, and so on. Very, very short. But the most enjoyable technique for the people was virtual classroom, where the people can stay together, designed in a very innovative, or at least we try to be innovative, with a test, follow-up, assistance, social networking after the virtual classroom, and so on. And this is running very, very fast. This is, for instance, an example of education to the people, external people, to citizens, citizen on what is statistics. And we think that the two combinations of a system who put the man in the center, the man and the woman, of course, who put the people in the center, and a strong support of continuous learning in a cost-effective manner can be a key, an important key, to introduce big changes into the statistical institutes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And now it's time for the sixth presenter. It's my pleasure to introduce Ms. Maria Giovanna Piras, who's the researcher in the National Account Department in ISTAT, where she's in charge of the statistics on quarterly input and cost of labor in Italy, and since 2010 of the revision analysis regarding main items of the quarterly national accounts, with particular reference to quality indicators and the news versus noise components. Between February 2015 and June 2017, she co-chaired the internal working group revision policy and analysis of short-term indicators, and main results achieved by the working group will be shortly reviewed in her presentation.
Thank you. Okay, during the last 2 years, ISTAT intensively worked in the design and establishment of a common framework in the revision policy and revision analysis across different domains of short-term statistics. At this aim, a mandate was given to a transversal working group. So I focus my presentation on these three main points. The first one is about objectives and results made by a working group. The second is the dissemination of revision statistics. We made a new standard for the short-term statistic domain through standardization of concept and classification, harmonization of practice through the revision form, a calendar of completed cycle of ordinary revision, and the last, transparency in the release of revision through revision triangles and summary results of the revision analysis by quality indicators. The last point, we made a projection and the realization of the web page and of the dissemination and other dissemination tools dedicated to the revision policy and revision analysis made by a multidimensional model that are able to update data and metadata and revision analysis. So the main points developed for the working group, the first was to collect all the short-term indicators with ordinary and major revisions. So we collected 21 surveys classified in 5 thematic areas, the 15-8 main short-term indicators for revision triangles and revisions analysis, find out standards of on revision policy, classification of revision standards, major and not scheduler, and standardization of causes of revisions, definition of a common set of quality indicators for revision analysis and graphs, choose of revision triangles as a generalized instrument to collect all different versions of data released. Okay. This is the first page of our web site about revisions. And about the harmonization of practice, we made for each short-term survey, currently ISTAT released a revision form that you can see in this slide. This revision form reports metadata on revision policy adapted for raw and whereas produced calendar and seasonally adjusted data, and a list of the reason explaining routine and major revisions. For revision policy, is a set of rules that defines how data are subject to revisions. So we are speaking about revision frequency, length of time, revision subject to two revisions. And then the last is a calendar of complete, is this one, a calendar of complete cycle of ordinary revision that is illustrated through a chart that for each release of data highlights revised data classified by frequency of revisions. Okay, these are another instrument that you can make in the our web page about the quality indicators, and we can see the graph, the two kind of graph. About the conclusion, I want to say that the progress made so far by ISTAT clearly demonstrated that combining different professional skills and expertise is essential to achieve efficient solution in the field of the data revisions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we are going to finish our session with the very interesting presentation of Ms. Catherine Bremner, who works in Quality Center within the Office for National Statistics in the UK. Her role is to monitor and reduce respondent burden across government statistical service. She uses her knowledge of quality reporting, reviewing, and assurance to improve statistics. Engaging with users to improve quality is the title of her presentation. Please, Catherine, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. So, yeah, my talk today is on engaging with users to improve quality. So why is it important to speak to our users? Can you hear me? No? Better. Hello. Yeah, that's better. So why is user consultation important? So speaking to our users is critical in order to improve quality in our outputs, and this allows us to have a clear understanding of both the data we publish and our users' needs. So based on that, the topic for our consultation was survey compliance data, and what we really wanted to do was consult with users to find out who uses survey compliance data and what do they actually use it for. We know that we collect this data on an annual basis across government statistical service, and we publish it on the website. But we publish it in something called the online list of government statistical surveys. But who uses this? It's a requirement under the code of practice, which is great, but for me, I still wanted to look and explore the quality, and I wanted to improve the quality and understand what users' needs really were. So how did I do this? Firstly, I just looked at web metrics information. I thought, right, okay, you know, how many people actually access this information? Are they even aware that it exists at all? So around 1,125 views in total in a year. So that's average about 4 a day. But when you actually looked at the time they spent on the page, it was around 3 minutes. And what the information didn't tell you is whether they actually downloaded the Excel spreadsheet. That was the crucial bit. That's the bit we wanted to know that we weren't able to capture. So then we went on to next steps. Okay, so what else can we do? Let's look at focus groups. Let's just get some group discussions going. So the first thing we did was we got a group of people together from, so we had 15 different representatives from across government departments. And we thought, okay, let's look at first the usability of the online list. Can they actually find the information on the website? So I put them into small groups and created a set of questions for each group. They went through the questions, and each group had an observer. And what they did is they captured how easily or difficult they could find the information in the first place. Because that then showed me whether there was issues with the navigation and how the actual tool was set up. The next thing I wanted to do was have a focus group asking very open questions about what do they use that survey compliance data for? Is it of interest? And the feedback that we got was for government, it seemed that it was useful, but for wider users, they were unaware of any need for this data. So the next thing, I thought, okay, so let's just have some individual meetings. Let's go and talk to government departments and just sit down with them. And the information, again, that we've got so far, we're right in the middle of still doing this, so there's still a long way to go, but they are actually unaware of anyone any wider users using this data. They use it, which is really valuable in itself. However, it's great that departments use it, and the actual purpose of what they use it for is interesting. So they use it to establish how many surveys they run, justification for running them, and this often leads to improvements, which is great to see. They use this information to design better questions, which then reduces respondent time and recontact. They also use it to measure change, so through mode of data collection or through transformation. The other thing they've asked for is to us to be able to produce the data in a timelier fashion. They want it within 6 months. Why has it taken us so long to publish this information? If they're going to use it, it needs to be very relevant. So that's one thing we're looking at. And I think the next steps for us is to continue to meet with government departments to try and make more headway into what they use that information for. But also we've set up 2 SurveyMonkey tools. One to go around to government departments, really getting that in-depth information about how they use the data. But another one that's set up primarily for wider users to put on the websites and to send round to a group of users to find out, would they find this information interesting? And if so, what is it about it that is interesting? Thank you very much. That's so hard.
Thank you very much. Thank you all presenters for the discipline and punctuality. And closing this session, I would like to thank all speakers for the very interesting presentations, and thank you audience for your presence at the session. I wish you good continuation and inspiring sessions. Now it's time to have lunch. Enjoy your meal. Thank you very much.